Hello and welcome back to Country Roads Confidential here at earsports.com, part of the 24/7 Sports Network. It is it's dark out here on Saturday night, but I feel like the sun is shining again over Morgantown and over the Pushkar Center. 56 days, 5 games without a win, and that is over under, I guess we could say, maybe surprising, maybe not. Most likely unlikely circumstances, I think, just by the way this game went and West Virginia's luck. And the fact that perhaps a game-winning touchdown pass was in the air and West Virginia got a break finally. Final score, 24-20. West Virginia goes into Manhattan, Kansas, and wins. Kind of does some things that we've been asking for and looking for, all around a good day. And I think that some people think that maybe the bar is turning around, or maybe it has all the way turned around now, and it's onward and upward from here. And we can debate all that, and we can discuss all that. And I need help, though, so I will tag in right now. Chris Anderson, who is on the road trying to make sense of everything that happened today. Chris, do you have a handle on what this means and how it happened yet?
Not really. I mean, I obviously was watching the game, saw what happened, saw the win. I'm looking at the stats. I can't quite figure out, because almost everything up until that last drive that Kansas State had where they kind of got downfield but didn't score, the interception one, everything was pretty even, almost all the way across the board, like all the way down to both teams being 20 of 30 passing, and they were averaging 5.5 yards per play and 3.0 yards per run. It was a wildly even game that, I guess, just the way the last month or so has gone, as you mentioned, felt like, well, okay. As soon as, Thompson threw that one pass up in the air that ended up getting picked, I just assumed there's the touchdown, because he threw it, yes, off his back foot, but he threw it with confidence, because as we saw when we saw another replay and as Brown noted out after the game, he was open. His receiver put the double move on, and he had beaten Hakeem Bailey and was open going in the end zone. But that little bit of pressure caused him to throw off his back foot, which caused them to kind of get a little air under that ball and let Bailey step in front of it and get the pick.
Story of the game, and there's many, and we'll touch on all of them, but Kansas State has 5 fifth-year seniors who start. They've started every game, and they got overwhelmed by West Virginia's defensive line. I was surprised that Kansas State wasn't running the ball and kept passing. I thought every time they dropped back, they did West Virginia a favor, because Pooler and Jones and Stills and Donahue were coming after him repeatedly. You were able to rush with 4. They covered, I thought, really well on the back end. And I think it got to the point where a team that runs the ball really well said, we can't block him, we're not going to run it. And it came through from maybe not the first play, because that went pretty poorly, but certainly early to the very end. The defensive line, a major difference today.
Yeah, and for those who, I don't know how you could have missed it, but a true 4-man front today. Obviously, West Virginia runs a kind of a 3-4 or 4-3 with that bandit being something that varies between the first and second line of defense. But today was just full on. There is no more. The bandit is just another defensive end today. And they rushed it and not a lot of rotation. Brown said after the game that most of those guys were out there for nearly every defensive snap in the game. And that just makes it all the more impressive that they were still able to get pressure on the quarterback.
Yeah, a little bit of Brandon Thrift. I don't believe I even saw Jordan Jefferson. So really, it was 6 guys and basically just 5 doing the work there too. Let's not even dance around this anymore. Let's get to the thing that everybody wants to talk about. After quite a wait, people wondering when it would happen, if it would even happen. Sean Ryan back with the team. Got out there, got targeted once, dropped a pass, didn't look great. But the guy throwing the pass is obviously the one they're going to discuss. Jarrett Daigie is there, and we can spend a lot of time on this, and I think we will. I just want to say this. People ask you and me questions all the time. We look for expert opinions, and we'll search the web. We'll pick up magazines and newspapers, and we look for answers. We have 2 eyes. Use your eyes. Those are the most valuable and most resourceful elements you have. There's really no way that you could have looked at West Virginia's offense the past couple of weeks and thought that quarterback wasn't a problem. Definitely not the problem, but it was a problem. And it seems silly at this point right now that no one else knew it. I think everybody there knew it, and they knew they really couldn't do anything because of the calendar and the redshirt rule. You get Daigie in and use your eyes. It looked decidedly different today, significantly better. I want to say this is maybe the beginning of the Daigie era. This feels, and I don't want to overdramatize this, this actually feels more like Brown's first game than James Madison. And what I mean by that is the first nine games, you're wondering, oh, man, quarterback, what's it going to look like when he has a quarterback? I'm not sure Daigie's the guy long term, if he's the starter next year or 2 years from now, but for the short term, the rest of this season, and I would think with the advantage going into the spring and the fall, that's Neil Brown's quarterback right now. Quite a performance to begin with. Not overwhelming, but made no mistakes and won a road game where they were not supposed to win.
I think you put it best when you said it to start there. Use your eyes, because looking at the box score, 20 of 30 for 234, meh. No true rushing yards. You know, he got sacked twice for 16 yards, but never actually ran the ball. But I, like, if you actually watched the game, you watched him make these throws. The offense is better. His throws are better. He was making plays that were not going to be made by any other quarterback on this roster. And if West Virginia does not make that change, I don't believe they win this game. I think he made enough plays today, and based off what we've seen from the other quarterbacks on the roster, I'm not sure any of them would have made the same plays. Am I going too far? Am I in the moment?
I'm with you 100%, and I think you can probably circle a handful of plays every game where Kendall, for lack of a better phrase, wasted the play, got caught and got sacked, danced around and missed an opening, didn't trigger when he was supposed to, just something didn't happen. Maybe he checked out of bounds, who knows? I can think of one instance today where Daigie did not make the play count. He didn't complete everything, but he threw one ball out of bounds, and it was wise, and it was late. Maybe his 28th or 29th pass, but he threw one ball out of bounds. Everything else, complete passes, incomplete passes, he made the throw count. He hung in there, went through his progressions, and came back to his check down. He saw something quick and went there. He waited for a play to develop and went there. He hung in there and took hits. I don't want to build the bronze bust of this guy yet, but there are a number of things I really liked. There was one play that caught my eye, and it's almost imperceptible. It's in the first quarter. It's a second down. It's a third down play, third and a long distance. He rolls right, and he breaks the pocket. He dances around. He rolls right, drops back, steps forward, and he throws about a 40-yard pass down the sideline to really nobody, and Esdale is running across the field and catches it, I don't know, a step or two out of bounds. It's a magnificent throw. It's like 40 yards. It's complete, except it's a, I don't know, a foot out of bounds maybe. But that just showed me that he's not pocketing anything. He's got that presence and that courage to make something happen. That was after and before he took a number of hits. The ball came out of his hand fast. He was putting it on the money, you know, in between levels of the defense. Just really impressed. And I don't know if it's because we hadn't seen that yet and we're waiting for this, or if he actually is that good.
Yeah, and including that last touchdown pass, the game winner to Bryce Wheaton. That was one where, again, the box score says he has no rushing yards, but I tell you, he is mobile. He got open. He got out of the pocket, created that play, extended it, threw it downfield to a wide. I'm still not sure why Bryce Wheaton was wide open, but I don't know. Again, Daigie extended that play. He made it happen, and I'm not sure that would have happened with Kendall.
Well, you know, Chris, I got to watch the tape.
Oh, boy.
Before I can speak. But I have to think on that play that I don't even think he expected to see Wheaton. And then I think he did. And I think he wanted to clear the traffic and maybe not go diagonal and vertical, which is just a really smart play. I mean, he got himself. He knew he had space, and he went there, and he threw it. And not only that, but he invited some trouble there. I'm pretty sure he got hit at least on his upper torso there and made that a harder pass than it was. But he didn't bail on it, and he didn't short arm it, and he didn't miss it. And I have to wonder how hard of a catch that was for Wheaton, because he's wide open. That ball can't get there fast enough. And it's a game-winning touchdown, and it's by and large the play of the game too. And Wheaton, one of a number of guys who, you know, didn't get a lot of opportunities, but did something with it today. And if you look at their contributions, pretty widespread, and people made it count. Really offensively, not really a weak spot that you can find right now. Today, not overall, but just today.
No, I thought the receiving corps did well. Campbell, again, stepping up. Still not clear why he wasn't playing more all year long. I know we've discussed this before, but he's seeing his snaps increase partly or mostly due to injury. lately, and he's really making it pay off. I think you noted that he was lining up in the slot a lot today.
Yeah.
And was very productive. And just a little, oh, by the way, that you dropped in that VIP article first thing this morning.
Should we do it? Should we do it?
Yeah, I mean, we gotta share that. That go ahead. You take the floor here.
Yeah. So when the old staff left, they left the waiver U manual in the desk, I guess. And we've seen West Virginia have some success on the waiver eligibility so far with Daigie, most notably, and Sean Ryan. But it does seem that Campbell is going to have a chance. They're going to pursue one from him. I've been told this from a couple of people that they like their chances. Long story short, there's a season 2017. He played four games. You're allowed to play three. If you miss two seasons in any combination of a developmental or medical redshirt, you're eligible for a sixth year. He missed one by medical, and then he played a little bit in a fourth game before he got injured, but you're over that limit of three. So I think that's what they're going to try to massage. I'd heard that they were going to do it, and I asked him on Tuesday when I saw him. I said, what's going on? And he said, we don't know yet. And he's kind of hopeful. I think a lot of people are hopeful because, again, this is not to pat ourselves in the back here. We'll do plenty of that here in a minute. Use your eyes. That guy was catching passes and getting open and scoring touchdowns for a team that didn't do a lot of those, you know, getting open, catching passes or scoring touchdowns with much ease, and he was doing it. So you're not going to complete or continue the four catches or four touchdowns, six catches ratio. But here we are today, five catches, two touchdowns, 92 yards. And West Virginia's weak spot had been the first quarter, and Kansas State's strength had been red zone defense. They get two red zone touchdowns in the first quarter to get this game going. Not an empty contribution from him.
We're going to have to teach you how to write breaking in big capital letters and put it all over the front page, Mike. We gotta discuss this.
Was that a full story, you think? Maybe?
I don't know. It's notable. It is certainly notable.
Let me tout you for a second here, because I was very big in the fresh set where I buried the George Campbell news, not knowing he was going to do this, but did have that in there. And I also said that West Virginia could and should run the ball, and that's how you win a game in the fourth quarter. Some of that came true. That's not how they won the game, but I think ran the ball pretty effectively. But you had mentioned earlier in the week that despite good statistics and just five touchdown passes allowed, you could throw on this team. We mentioned 20 for 30, 234, three touchdowns. They made some mistakes in the back end and let West Virginia score three times on plays that they really needed to have. You know, I think all the touchdowns, if I'm not mistaken, are third down scores. I'll have to go back and check. Definitely two are. I'll do that while you answer this question. But what gives there? How did you see this coming, and what were we missing about their secondary?
Well, I think so many people, when they look at stats with all these teams all over the place, they're looking at kind of game total averages and ratings for the whole game. And with the way Kansas State plays, how slow they play, how methodical they are, how their time of possession, it limits the number of plays. And so when I was looking at that, because what triggered it was our Kansas State guys asked me about West Virginia's run defense being so horrible. And I thought to myself, yeah, I didn't think West Virginia's run defense is horrible. And sure enough, they're last in the Big 12, or were, in yards allowed per game, and by a fairly large margin. But the thing is, it's because other teams are getting ahead of West Virginia, and because West Virginia's offense wasn't staying on the field. So other teams were getting more plays, they were getting more runs, and the total average was higher. But the per run average, West Virginia was, I think, third or fourth in the league, and had been excellent over the last couple months, in our last couple games. And so then I started looking at Kansas State's, and their per play averages actually weren't great. Their run defense total looks solid, but they allowed over 5 yards per run coming into this game. So that, and then the passer rating was not great either. They were one of the lowest in the Big 12. So it's more of a quantity over quality type thing. With
breaking news from the play-by-play, all three touchdown passes are on third down, including the third and 22 to Wheaton, a third and 13 to Campbell, and a third and 7 to Campbell. So again, plays you had to have and did it. Another thing we mentioned was red zone. West Virginia's defense, they won. So let's use a good adjective, friendly in the red zone. Not a strength this year. Kansas State is typically one of the more efficient teams in the country, and you know they make those things work. They get down there three times, but kick two field goals, I believe, and that's a difference. West Virginia, Kansas State's red zone defense, terrible. Had allowed 100% of scores on their possessions. Got out of one today on a missed field goal at the end of the half, but got down there and scored two touchdowns. And again, we've talked about this before. They really had to make things count and make it matter too. But what did you see as the unexpected development? I could point in a couple of things. Third downs, Kansas State very good on third down. You mentioned their pass defense, the red zone difference in the game. I don't know, Casey Legg drilling a 51-yard field goal, which turned out to be really significant. Is there one thing that you think stands out that was unexpected that they had to have that maybe they didn't think they would have?
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
I think the way, I'm going to go a little bit off the board here with the way the secondary played after Norwood was gone. Because especially once he was out, I thought, boy, this is when we've seen things go bad. When they lose one senior or a junior or something, an experienced player in the secondary, and they start shuffling in more freshmen, more sophomores, guys with no experience and moving around, that's when we've seen that secondary kind of fall apart, have miscommunications, and get lit up. And when Norwood went out, I thought, here we go again. But it didn't happen. There were a couple, but for the most part, they kind of held Thompson in check, made a couple big plays, obviously the big one to end it. And that's probably a good thing, because I don't know if you were listening to Neil Brown in the postgame, but he says it does not look good for Norwood long term. This might have been the last we've seen of him this season.
That looked like maybe a clavicle.
Yeah, he said, let's see, he didn't return, and I would say early indications are not good for him. So, doesn't sound great.
Last week, we closed on something. You asked the question, what do you need to see? And my answer to that question was that they really had to make the other team, I think I said box left-handed, meaning you couldn't let a team ride its strength. And I would think that in the end, Kansas State does not want to throw 39 passes, certainly doesn't want to turn over twice because they don't. Seven penalties is not a lot, but it's a lot for Kansas State. A really big mistake on special teams, which they don't do, that gave West Virginia, I believe, a first down on the drive that ended in a touchdown instead of a missed field goal. So Casey Legg actually hooked one left. The nose guard jumped the center.
Yep.
is illegal. I'm glad they called that because that happens a lot and they don't call it. West Virginia gets in the end zone, so had to make things count there. But again, I think shut them down running, made them pass. So they didn't want to. And I think that's progress for West Virginia. You know, they weren't able to pick on what other teams couldn't do. They weren't able to do what they did well against other teams, whether that was a strength or weakness. This was them. You know, West Virginia is not a great running team. Good today. I think effective is probably a good word. Kansas State's a bad rush defense, and they ran the ball effectively. We mentioned red zone and third down stuff. Those are strengths for Kansas State. West Virginia took advantage. To me, that was progress. I think the big thing is the running game. It's going to say 28 carries for 85 yards. That's 3 yards a carry. Daigie gets sacked twice for 16 yards, so that sacks that average. And then a knee, I think, toward the end of the game. So really, you're talking 25 carries for 103 yards, and that's Brown and McCoy, so none of this three or four back stuff, no Tony Mathis. So 25 carries, 103 yards. Chris, is this running game actually getting better? You said no last week, just no. And I think they said, whoa, not so fast. You know, maybe they did block those run plays well on pass plays last week, and they were actually right about this.
Can I say not so fast as well? Because I think, if I remember correctly, I believe it was they had 77 yards in the first half rushing.
Okay.
And then so another 26. So, yeah, in the first half, things looked great. I think they were averaging 5 or 6 yards per carry in the first half. And then in the second half, right up until late in the fourth quarter, they were almost in negative yards, I feel like, before they got a couple chunk plays and still – you know, only averaged a yard or so in the second half per rush in the second half, which causes some concern for me.
There are a number of questionable plays and questionable situations that ultimately don't matter right now. But on their do or die drive where they have it and they want to go 4 minute drill and try to run the clock out, they get the ball back. Man, I want to say like 5:35, something like that. Let me look at my notes here. 5:35. Brown rushes for 13. Brown rushes for. And you're thinking, hey, they got a chance here. You know, it's right about past midfield. It's second and six. They lose 5 yards. I think they ran like inverted veer because they were, it looks like Daigie himself was reading the outside guy and he hands off inside. And it looked like a play that has to go in the trash. A really weird chance or a spot to run a chance play like that. But pick their moments in the first half, too. Do you think they're successful through the air with Daigie without the run, or do you think that maybe Daigie's prowess with the pass helped them out running the ball? Because they have to get this game in the pocket.
That's tough. We do need to discuss some of these play calls, some of these draws.
First play of the game, new quarterback, let him in. Draw.
Yeah. I can't do that. What was it? In the first half, second and 20, call a timeout. Waste of timeout and then run play on second and 20 when you're down. So no, that was in the second half when they were down 6, 20-14. And then you run again. I don't know. It's kind of rough there with some of these draw plays, but what was I going to touch on? I do think that is something else we need to discuss. I think it's going to get kind of pushed to the side because West Virginia won, but this is multiple games in a row now where this team is using second half timeouts because they're not lined up correctly or having substitution problems or about to have a delay of game penalty even after, like, say, the clock stopped. That's concerning to me a little bit. I think we're seeing that a couple times a game each of the last 3 or 4 games, and it was something that I was going to lead off with tonight until they won. Like, it was really bugging me because that's, you know, say Kansas State comes down and scores a touchdown. West Virginia has no timeouts to use because they've been using them up on, you know, second and 20s in the beginning of the third quarter. Mm-hmm. And then not even coming out with a good play out of it. So it's something that I'm keeping an eye on going forward, but just pocketing that one for later.
What did you think of this? They called one timeout first quarter, maybe, when Daigie was changing the play at the line of scrimmage, and then he checked later in the game on one of those 3rd and 6 plays where they ran a replay into a blitz. That's 2 checks. There were a bunch of times where Daigie was, you know, fingers to the tongue, get dropped back in the pocket, step back up to the center, talk to your tackles, get a word out to the receiver. It's a lengthy process. They burned one timeout. They got caught close to the clock a couple other times, but basically because they were checking. And we spent some energy this week saying, can you believe this? The offensive coordinator says, we really don't check plays. Is that an addition because of the first nine games, or is that an addition because of who started the 10th?
I have to think because of the first nine games, because I think it has to be in your arsenal. You have to be able to check. You can't take that away no matter who your quarterback is. And I can't imagine. I mean, obviously, I think we've been discussing having Daigie come in for a couple weeks now. But a guy who has yet to really truly play in a game at West Virginia to come in and just have free reign to check things when the guy who has started the first nine doesn't. So I think it was more of a situation where they said, we gotta give them the freedom to do that, or else we're going to keep getting like that draw play into an eight-man box again for a six-yard loss.
Be curious to see how many times he did or he didn't and what the success rate was, because it was a clear addition to me. I think it's probably a combination. I think you're right that at some point, I would think not because we asked about it or we talked about it, that they realized this is not nearly as much flexibility as we need. Our quarterback has to have more latitude. He's there. He understands the defense. We got to give him something. And maybe Daigie just knows us a little bit better. Maybe he did a lot of this stuff, this no huddle call the play stuff in Bowling Green. And so it's a little bit more mobile for him, but that's probably an addition there.
On Daigie and his knowledge of this and their comfort level with him, I wanted to bring up something that Neil Brown brought up after the game, and it kind of touches on how, you know, for our VIP members who found out earlier in the week from Mike that Daigie was the likely starter.
Literally in a coffee house in Pittsburgh with Justin Jackson and William Dean from the Dominion Post. We were drinking dirty chais and hot chocolates, the glamour life before the basketball game, and my phone buzzed a couple times, and they said, here's the deal. And long story short, I don't want to steal your thunder here, so I'll get it out of the way really quickly.
No, go.
They changed our practice routine a little bit last week. Instead of having whatever it is, 90-10, 80-20, maybe it's in between. Instead of having that, they went pretty close to 50-50, but it was pretty clear that Kendall was a starter still last week. So I don't know what the deal would be, 65-35, 60-40, something like that. Whatever the numbers are, but it wasn't clearly one with a little bit to the other. It was a slight edge to one over the other. And a lot of people perked up and said, that's strange. So Daigie's time is obviously coming. Lo and behold, he gets in. No proclamation Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, but those adjusted reps, 65, 35, 60, 40, whatever, Kendall was in the backseat to Daigie. And Daigie was the one getting the new, quote unquote, QB1 reps, whatever that number is. And that was pretty much a Tuesday, Wednesday thing into their Thursday practice. And people got in that plane Friday saying, we got a new quarterback.
Folks, he's doing it again. He's listening in beforehand, saying he doesn't know. That's it. That's exactly what Neil Brown said. He said two weeks ago that it was 60-40 Kendall. 60-40 Kendall for the Texas Tech game. And then on Tuesday, the same day as his press conference, when he said they had a plan, they flipped it and had Daigie go 60-40, and that they felt comfortable with how Daigie handled the first team offense and how they did, and they decided to make the change. He didn't say which day that they made that decision to officially flip to Daigie over Kendall, but he did have the conversation with Kendall beforehand, because he talked about, you know, obviously Kendall was disappointed and then wanted to reiterate that, hey, Kendall was not the reason we were losing. So that was what Brown said after the game.
I didn't cheat. In fact, I told you that before we got on, I couldn't listen to the Facebook Live because it was very pixelated and it wasn't working. But and that jives with what we wrote last night. Again, yeah. I was at the coffee house and I got the word, and I was actually trying to do some homework on it. And we talked about how far do we go with this. And what was strange was that people said, like, hey, we don't know if Daigie's going to start. We suspect because of this, it would be unusual for a guy who got limited reps to be the starter. So it's pretty logical. But who knows? I mean, maybe they're giving Daigie an extended audition. Maybe he flubbed it. Who knows? But I really wonder. I don't think you can ask Kendall to go on the plane without knowing, especially when it's pretty clear in the practice reps what the deal is. So I think they had to tell him. But I don't think there was a stand in front of the locker room moment before I heard. And certainly they have an idea. And that, part of his plan. I'd be very surprised if they didn't walk into practice Tuesday and tell those guys, here's how we're going to do it. And those guys got it right away. And it was the right thing to do. I don't think you can argue that at this point.
No, like I said, I think there were several plays in there that really changed the game, and they are not plays that I think Kendall was making if he were in the game. So
here we go. We have two games left. West Virginia is 4-6, still alive for a bowl. The most West Virginia thing that I can think of would be to go 6-6 and not be able to play Diggy in the bowl game. Like, that is the perfect story. That's the next chapter of my book, because you can't enjoy this if that happens, you know. They're not going to sit him for one of these final two games like they're going to have to do with Jared Bartlett, Bartlett did not play today, unless I missed that. So he's still good to play and get his snaps in. Actually, he would have the bowl game problem too, now that I guess. But let's not get there. But Oklahoma State, you know, on the road, really good run game. West Virginia's run defense looks lithe, I guess you would say. TCU, that's on the road. That's a shorter week, the day after Thanksgiving, where you can practice a little bit more than normal because you don't have school, but it's still a shorter week. And who knows? I mean, they may have their seventh loss a week from now, but they could also be 5-6. But there is an energy, there's a balance that wasn't there. They have a quarterback that they know can do things that they did not have on their side before. I do think there would be stranger things in West Virginia beating Oklahoma State if you believe that past its prologue. The 2014 season is awful interesting when you think about what Clint Trickett did. I'm not selling out the stadium, I don't think, but I think there's a lot of people who are more interested in this team than if they were 3-7 and had not yet played Daigie. So they'll probably have a good crowd. I think there's some juice that they really needed. I do think this is still a two-game season here, and I would not be surprised that one Saturday at home against a team that is pretty good but is not the typical Oklahoma State spread it out, throw it around NFL quarterback, NFL receivers team. And then you go into a one-game season on a Friday at TCU, where who knows, but this gets very interesting now, doesn't it?
It does. Do you want to go ahead and just jump right in, first take style, to who starts at quarterback in the bowl game if Diggy's?
It's the debate I don't want to have and the debate I was born to have. Like, you have to play Trey Lowe. It's going to happen. Like, it's just the perfect thing. I'm just sitting here twiddling my fingers because it's a month, or I guess it'd be about 3 weeks of just debating about who the quarterback is going to be. Like, you can't play Kendall if you pulled the plug on him in November. Like, stuff like that is just too good to pass up. But now we got the cart and the horse all mixed up right now too.
So yes, we do.
Your point, it's very interesting again, which it had not been for 5 weeks.
Speaking of interesting, as we're recording this, I was trying to look something up, and Baylor is putting a beat down on Oklahoma at this very moment. So be prepared for your college football playoff semifinalist Bears. Is that what we're expecting?
What's the score?
14-3, and it looks like Baylor is first and goal, if I'm reading this correctly. 21-3. Yep, oh, they scored again.
I'm not sure that's a surprise. I think it's the right now it's a number, but I think that you could see that. I would be more surprised by Baylor opening it up against Oklahoma than I would be the other way around. But there's some red flags on Baylor on Oklahoma right now.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we have the checkered flag right now. A pretty full weekend, Chris. Basketball, Final Four of the Big 12 tournament. I don't think that's anything we want to get into right now, but they look good. Football looks better than they did. It's fun when these two teams are playing well in November. I'm not sure that they're playing well, but they're playing better. Certainly basketball's fine, but football jumped back in the deep end of the pool today. Cannonball. Everybody's splashing around having fun again. It's supposed to be this way, right?
It is. And I'm really looking forward to, on the heels of our who should start the bowl game debate, should Oscar leave for the NBA debate? I'm looking forward to that. One and done. Just all sorts of good stuff going on.
All right. Well, I'd be remiss if we didn't say hi to Neil Brown before we get out of here right now. That's all for this
Wait,
time.
What's he going to pick on you about on Tuesday?
I didn't do anything wrong this week. He cracked the whip, and I got in line, and I said only nice things. And, boy, he certainly cashed some capital this week, so I owe him a couple strudels and a tall macchiato at our breakfast club meeting, the fan club, on Monday morning, I guess. So I'll check back with details when we catch up on Wednesday. How's that sound?
Sounds good.
As I was saying, that's all for this time. We'll see you next time. I am Mike Casazza.
And I'm Chris Anderson.
And this was our best episode. We'll see you next time.